Krishna, around the clouds, around the sun, around the sun.
The most famous account, the Epic of Kanaka, of course found in the Sutta in Shabbos, about the following days. The Gemara there simply reads as follows. First of my Kanaka, the Tara of the Kaka, the Kisla, the Yom of the Kanaka, the Tamayan Limun, the Lord of Yisla, the Lord of Islam is followed. So first the Gemara describes simply what Kanaka has become. Then the Gemara refers to the origin of Kanaka, what it's based on. So very succinctly, Gemara simply describes that the basis for the Takana of Kanaka relates specifically, and according to this Gemara only, to the days of Pasha. This account, of course, is striking from several perspectives, and in certain respects is counterbalanced by other reports, which I'm not going to discuss this evening. Primarily, of course, what's interesting is the de-emphasis, if not exclusion, of the Mokama in favor of the days of Pasha as a motivating force of the establishment of Kanaka. To be sure, the significance of the Mokama is registered in different sources I mentioned earlier, Sikhar Abasi, for example, and even in, of course, the Tila that we declare, Al-Nisit, Rabin Miyamati. And this theme is also expressed in other halakhic contexts and through certain nuances. For example, designation of the name Kanaka, as interpreted famously by the Abudram, Shibali Alekhet, Kanu Kalkei, interpreted by many as referring to the afterglow of military victory. The Kripalish's famous response to the even more famous question of Beis Yeltsin, why it was that the miracle was viewed as 8 days, why do we celebrate 8 days when in fact the miracle on the surface seems to have been restricted to 7 days? Of course, the Kripalish's answer to that question is that the first day celebrates the military victory, the other day refers to the day of Hashem. The Tzin, in a less extreme fashion, argues that Kavana, for Al-Nisan and Shechayavim, the first night of Kanaka, one's Kavanah should include reference to the names of the Muhammad in addition to the names of the Pachashem as well. And finally, the Minhag in Sfarad, to read Megillat Antiochus, which records the details inherent in the military struggle itself, again, accents that particular thing. And yet, this notwithstanding, clear accent relates to the dramatic first post-revolt event, namely the days of Pachashem, not on the miracle of the survival. The centrality of this theme is such that the Abudram, for example, feels compelled to find a hint of this theme, of this motif, in the term Kanaka itself. And in a very contrived fashion suggests that what Kanaka in fact means is Ches Neiros V'Halakha Ketilo, Moskva. This phenomenon of the strict emphasis of the names of the Pashemen, of course, inspired a plethora of questions. Some of them are as follows. For example, why should the focus be on the post-victory event? The phenomenon which on the surface has nothing whatsoever to do with the motivation behind the struggle and the essence of that struggle. It's true, the phenomenon itself is a miraculous one, but that in and of itself should not be reason for it to be accorded such centrality. After all, there are other miracles. Megillas Tanis is filled with references of them. Beyond that, the fact is that the Nisim, which are recorded by the Ilustanis, were Baka at a particular point in history. Kanaka, on the other hand, outlasted them, and according to the Rishabi and Tanis, will outlast even more Kanaka Purim, that is. The question is why? What is so significant, what is so crucial about this particular event? The question popularized by Rabbi Mizrahi, his Perish on the Smug, compounds the mystery of selection of Neros Kanaka as the ultimate symbol of Kanaka still further, and injects even an element of urgency to it. After all, he argued, the halakha asserts the principle that tumah mutar b'tzibur, that when it comes to a barrier for public avodah, it claims that tumah will not prevent it. The implications of which are that Shimon Kamar in this particular case was not indispensable to the Mitzvah itself, and in essence that renders the entire nase halakhically unnecessary and possibly even insignificant. In addition, the Meiri, Bala Eshkol, the Avodah, and others explain that the duration of the nase, of 8 days, along with the following lines. They argue that this is a time which was required in order to attain the creme de la creme of Hashem Tzar. In other words, it wasn't sufficient for them to find Shem Tzar. They had to find the best Shem Tzar available, and therefore never had to proceed on a pilgrimage to Tarkoa. By the time it would take them to go and to return, that constituted the 8 days. Shem Tzar alone would not suffice to determine or terminate the nes. Again, this adds or enhances this notion of superfluity, which seems to be inherent in the mitzvah of the Arkhamer. So what then is the purpose of such a superfluous nes? And why should it, specifically, emerge as the ultimate symbol of the Arkhamer, especially when other alternatives, more substantively based, are available? There are four, I should just mention, for the sake of clarity, who proposed to resolve this final issue, question of the El Mizrahi, by challenging the premise, by advocating that there are a lot of distinctions between the classic case of Tumotur and Sibur and the case represented by this particular instance. For example, the Kaddish's argument was that one should distinguish between Tumat Nes and Tumat Zav. Or others declared that a distinction should be made between that which is already has a status of Kedusha, but which now cannot be subject to a vote because of a later problem with Tumah, and those things which initially were common. Or a distinction between a time which is related to Chanukah on the Deah, when Hashras HaShchina itself is at least not in its fullest manifestation, as opposed to instances where Chanukah on the Deah has already been established. All of these are very controversial, and in a sense the question remains even once these are proposed. I would explain that the significance of the nes is to be viewed in terms unrelated to the halakhic demands of the nes, but as affirming the principle of hashkafa. Laharos chiba yisema, to use the language of the Chacham Tzvi. The idea here being that just as we found, for example, that in Shimon HaTzadik's time, an element of hashkafa was manifested in that the Nehra Maravi was constantly dole. In a similar fashion, Hashbaru wanted to send a clear sign of approbation to the Hashmonaim, and as such, this particular nes represented that stamp of approval. But of course, the difficulties remain. Why should one select an unrequired and unrelated phenomenon as the symbol of the Hashmonaim's revolution? Especially, as I mentioned before, when alternative symbols with obvious substantive connections to the events themselves abound. What I would suggest is that the religious didactic significance of the Nes Pach Shemen is due precisely to its lack of technical halakhic indispensability. That by virtue of the reality of Tuma Utra B'Zibur, the Nes of Pach Shemen constituted the ideal symbol of Chanukah, inasmuch as it captures most effectively the rationale which underlies the revolt of Hashmonai. So Lavush, of course, in his famous comment, describing distinction between Purim and Chanukah with regard to the issue whether or not Chanukah should be defined as a Yom, as a key of half a key of Mishneh, declares that on the office of the priest did not threaten the physical survival of Jewish people. Rather, his avowed aim was clearly to curb their allegiance or to destroy their allegiance to Torah mitzvahs. But this notion of spiritual survival, which he asserts, and which is definitely valid, requires some clarification. From the narrow perspective of technical obligation, compliance with such decrees are, at least many times, are justified and even mandated by Allah. The principle of Yahweh Galiare in case of Pikuah Nefesh. A minimalist B'Yevon approach in this kind of circumstance will often attain legitimacy. The Kashmiran, however, was sensitive to the fact that the spiritual significance of Torah and mitzvot are such that they dictate that when such zeros form a challenge to our commitment, when they become formalized and broadly institutionalized, if they threaten to perpetuate the state of religious mediocrity, then a broader perspective must be brought to bear, and the situation has to be evaluated in a different light. It then becomes imperative to proclaim vociferously that the Torah does not consist of obligations to be discharged or not violated without proper justification, but represents an opportunity for Avodas Hashem, man's raison d'etre in its most basic form. And in this sense, Torah and Halakha has to be pursued with passion and with ambition, leading to the ultimate goal of a maximal or a kalkhila type attainment. A yahadus which is stripped of its potential for this kind of attainment, and which is steeped even in legitimate Heterim and the Dievets predominantly, faces a threat of spiritual extinction. Thus, a commitment to the doctrine of maximalism and spiritual ambition defies even Tikkun Nefesh. Indeed, according to many Rishonim, the idea that Sechir Yeharet Valiyah or Bashat Ekberah or Bashat Hashmad is rooted precisely in this attitude. And not only is one permitted, but one is obligated in this kind of circumstance to defend the honor of Torah in this sense. Perhaps, possibly, it was this mentality which reflects the impetus of the Kashmirim campaign. In the aftermath, then, of a justified but mystical period of spiritual mediocrity, one, albeit motivated by persecution, it became urgently crucial to reestablish and to revitalize the commitment to the idea, to the notion of maximalism, or, if I may coin the phrase, lekalkhilism in Avodas Hashem. A mediocre is halakhically adequate, hadlakas neros, predicated on tuma utra v'tzibur, as the first public performance of this new regime, would have been not only anticlimactic, but would have struck the wrong chord for the future, and would have inadequately captured the spirit and essence of the revolution itself. The name Pashemet, then, precisely because it was superfluous from the perspective of the minimal didyevet demands of Kiyom Mitzvah, dramatically demonstrated the centrality of mitzvahs as a vehicle for religious expression by underscoring the importance of the concept of ideal performance. Through tumah, is utra v'tzibur, and through this manifestation one can fulfill the mitzvah. The fact of the matter is that the ideal of Shemit Tahar remains a very real one, one to be pursued with passion and ambition. And it is this ambition which was deemed sufficient, or sufficient spiritual value, to create and inspire the need for a next. A next which would ensure the compliance of the level of the Chatzkina. This next, then, obviously, should persist for 8 days, until the absolute best Shemen Tahar Min HaMukhar could substitute for it, so that you can sustain the concept of allegiance and ambition to the ideal itself. The anomalies then associated with the next of Hanukkah are precisely the very factors which make it the most suitable representation and the most suitable symbol of the epic itself, while the next of the Muhammad, precisely because it was indispensable, was viewed to be disqualified in forming this function. This maximalist posture, then, which I'm arguing is reflected in the Nase of Hanukkah, is reflected, of course, obviously, in Hilchos Hanukkah as well. The most striking and dramatic example of which, of course, is the phenomenon of Mahadrim and Mahadrim. Universally, we have the notion of Zakei Gavei, the Israel of other mitzvot, which determines that we have an obligation as much as possible to perform mitzvot as ideally as possible. However, Hanukkah is unique in several respects. Firstly, it's a special halakha. Halakha, obviously, because it's enunciated, which goes beyond the Kedah. Beyond that, we have two levels, two added levels, in addition to the Kedah. Beyond even that, what we find in the context of Hanukkah, which we do not find in other contexts, is a specific form, which is given to the Hebrew mitzvah or to the Kedah. It's not left to our imagination. It's not left to us to decide. Beyond all of that, it's clear from if you examine some of the last ramifications or the relationships that exist between Mahadrim and Mahadrim, for example, and Ikar Nes, that the different levels involved transform the quality and the character of the mitzvah itself. There are many examples of this particular phenomenon. The Rambam, for example, in the post-Tosafot, understanding of the notion of practice of Mahadrim and Mahadrim, represents a shift from a Chovas Bayis to a Chovas Gadol. And as much as each individual is now obligated to write to light the Neros Hanukkah. Rabbi Kinager's famous psak that if one forgets to light the bracha before the first candle, the Ikar HaMitzvah, Yerushim Esau, that one can still make that bracha before lighting, as long as one is still in the state before his lips, the hydrogen on the hydrogen candles, again, clearly indicates that we're not simply dealing with a nice way of beautifying or enhancing the mitzvah, but we're dealing with an enhancement which represents a qualitative and different level to the mitzvah itself. The discussion will clash in certain instances between the necessity for HaMitzvah and the Mahadra and the Hadrin, for it has given the capacity for one Ner Shemen or many Ner Shava, and other issues of this kind also reflect the theme. What could be more appropriate then? For the Mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah, patterned as it is after the Ner Kaka Shemen itself characterized by superfluity, to highlight the concept of gradation in Mitzvah and the implications regarding Avodas Hashem, which is inherent therein. Another example. Halakha brought down the Rambam, even a person who's poverty struck, normally, the principle of Kamsu Mitzvah is that unpunished. There is a certain level beyond which one is not obligated to ensure a lakatkina or even an actual performance of Mitzvah. And yet, when it comes to Hanukkah, and only one other exception that I'll cause us, this principle is thrown out. Here, we assert the principle of sacrifice at almost any cost. True, there are general limits to commitments to the Hasidim. Whether they be Chomesh, whether they be Yavar, or Be'al Yahare, whether they be Shemen, whether they be Tumah, which are the Tzibor. And these represent concessions to competing principles and values, and to a hierarchy which often has to determine in that kind of situation which takes precedence. However, the theme of Hanukkah specifically addresses the theme of spiritual ambition, of religious maximalism, and this entails the willingness to sacrifice beyond the technical value of a particular mitzvah. On this basis, I think it's also possible to clarify the Medrash in Bahalovska, which links Aaron's distress at the cost of being excluded from the Kabbalah Sanhedrin, in the case of or at least the aspect of Hanukkah Sabbatea, with the Ner Hanukkah, which, according to Medrash, is viewed as his compensation. Rambam explains that Aaron's ambition, Rambam Gideon Halotha, that Aaron's ambition was basically to contribute not only to the Avodas Kovah of the Ner Nigulim, over which he himself presided, but to have the opportunity of Avodas Hashem in the area of Kabbalah Sadaf, which, in this instance, was accorded strictly, exclusively, to the Nesim. Nadavos, precisely because they're not obligatory, provide the ideal form for a maximalist expression of Avodas Hashem, and underscore the sensitivity to the significance of mitzvot as the ultimate vehicle for Avodas Hashem. It's interesting that Rashi in Vayakel cites the famous Medrash that regarding the Trumas HaMishkan, the Nesim's perception of this whole process was one of burden and necessity. They were satisfied to complete whatever it was that was left over what the rest of the people, what the masses, had not contributed. And the Medrash argues that it's for that reason that we spell the name Nesim without a yud in that particular concept, in that particular context. They were judged to be spiritually flawed and lacking a certain dimension, and thus symbolically the yud was omitted from the spelling of that name. Thus chastised, the Nesim, when it came to Hanukkah from the Beach, says the Medrash, seized the initiative, treating it as the significant and unique opportunity that it was for Avodas Hashem, precisely because it represented a voluntary expression of that. Now, sensitive to the fact that any initiation of Kedusha, whether it be Mishkan or Mizbeach, is precisely manifested in the area of Nedava, the Nesiim took the initiative and were exclusively granted this particular opportunity. Out of distress, I'd like to suggest, although Rambam has a slightly different interpretation of this aspect of it, but Aaron's distress possibly was resolved by the promise that the Kohanim would preside over Nero's Hanukkah much, much later on in history. The reason being, precisely because Nero's Hanukkah represented this total allegiance to the notion of voluntarism and maximalism and the doctrine of Chassidim. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah of the Kessel Beis wants to depict the difference between the era of the Ivanim and that of the Kashmonaim, make the following comment. Shigadr Malchus Yavav Shalal Asker Shem Shamayim, which is Shigadr Malchus Kashmonaim, and Iskom is Kibushim Maskirin Shem Shamayim Hafidu Bisharat. A radical transition from a muted and mediocre spiritual state of Yahdus to the theme of an all-pervasive and maximally demanding algorithm, encompassing even what on the surface looks as if it's a neutral domain of Charles of the Immanence. Rabbi Bakaye in his Katakhenach links the word with the phrase Kanaka, the term Kanaka, with the theme of Kino. Kanosanar al-Pidarko. And as such, in light of that application, Kanaka's theme in essence represents a manifesto of sort to us all. To B'nai Torah, the theme of Kanaka should be obvious. Our goal then, not merely to avoid Surin, and even to fulfill Chiyuvim, but to engage our Kadosh Baruch Hu through the medium of Avodas Hashem with as much initiative and as much ambition as we possess and are able to bring to the process. In the area of Talmud Torah, it's not sufficient to acquaint oneself or familiarize oneself with basic concepts or even satisfy the minimum demand of Lulav Amanas Lasos. It's necessary to go beyond that, to cultivate an ambition to master Torah in all its manifold complexity and subtlety, to strive to integrate and to internalize Torah to the extent that it begins to shape our own attitudes and to dictate our ideals. If we are truly committed to Torah Mada, this is not a Torah Mada lecture, we must ensure that our formulation of Torah Mada is one which deepens, maximizes, and broadens our spiritual life, not one which distracts and detracts from it. Kanaka's theme then of a commitment to spiritual maximism, to Hafiloism, to Mahadrin and Mahadrin, to Hafilo Ani Hakispanis and Al-Sadaka, to Shemin Tar despite Tuma Kucho the Sibur, is timeless and eternal. Hence, the appropriate comment of Yushali, in Kal Mahadrin Yu the Taylor, Kanaka Purim, Love Mithala. Kanaka, like the theme that it represents, remains and is enduring.